My son is teaching me how to be a wrestling fan again. And that's a good thing. This episode's going to focus on the recent SummerSlam pay-per-view from WWE, but it's also going to focus on the other aspect of it, and that's just wrestling fandom, period. I know I've been talking about that a lot in recent episodes, but it feels like every time that I'm watching a show or going on social media that it's just so much negativity around the product itself. It just ruins the experience, to be quite honest. Hey, just before we get started on this episode, I just wanted to mention that if you haven't already subscribed to my YouTube channels, I would appreciate if you head on over and do so. Really doing some great stuff over on Wrestling with the 80s on YouTube, and just released a video recently, the last couple of days, I had the help of some fellow podcasters on. I just wanted to say thank you to them. So Ted the Hillbilly Heel from The Heel Truth, Taylor from Jade at Wrestling, and Will Gray from Botched Spots and Chair Shots and Rivet City Radio came on to do an episode called Talking the Territories, where we talked about Jim Crockett Promotions and of course, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, but just that amazing territory, that legendary territory that really was a powerhouse during the 80s and the real competition to the WWF as they were becoming a monster as well. And just some fantastic memories we had about that territory. And it was a great episode. These guys were really fun to chat with. There was a lot of great takes on the product. There was a lot of humor, a lot of laughs, and a really enjoyable show. And I plan on doing different episodes of Talking the Territories with some different folks, just talking some of the different areas. But I figured none better to start with the territory to end all territories being Jim Crockett Promotions. So if you're an old school fan, head on over to the Wrestling with the 80s channel and check it out. And also while you're there, feel free to subscribe to Wrestling with the Truth on YouTube as well. Doing some more modern product stuff on that. But both channels are cooking and smoking, as Dusty Rhodes would say. But for sure, really appreciate any support for that.
You are currently listening to one half of the greatest tag team of podcasts there are out there today. Once you get finished with this great episode, go on over on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, even over on YouTube, and check me out, Ted the Hillbilly Hill of the Hill Truth Wrestling Podcast, award-winning, critically acclaimed, number one in Antarctica, and I'm going to break down the bad guys, the villains, the heels of professional wrestling. And always remember, there's the real truth, then there's the heel truth.
Watching SummerSlam this weekend with my son was a refreshing experience because this is somebody who's watching it from new eyes. He's 11 years old. He's been to a grand total of one wrestling show with me. It was a local independent promotion. Shout out to Kaizen Pro Wrestling for the splendid time that he had there. If you go back in the archives of our podcast, you'll see an episode where we talk about it. It was a review of the Kaizen Pro Wrestling show that he attended. And he's watched a couple of actual pay-per-views with me as well. I know, I still call them pay-per-views. I know they're PLEs if they're WWE, but whatever. You know what I mean. But he watched the most recent WrestleMania, and I believe it was the WrestleMania before that, maybe a Royal Rumble. So nothing too big, but prior to that, his previous experience with wrestling was Scooby-Doo featuring the wrestlers from WWE. And at that time, he became a big fan of John Cena from that. And that's not a surprise, because that's what John Cena was created for, to market to the kids. And I get it. I understand why he is. He had a very... very good epiphany, actually, while watching this to start off with, as we were seeing the intro to the SummerSlam, and we saw John Cena and Cody Rhodes and things like that. And he mentioned that his favorite wrestlers are Cody Rhodes and John Cena because they're good, and not good as in they're really good wrestlers, because they're good people and they do good things and they're very heroic. And especially John Cena doing all the stuff he does for the Make-A-Wish Foundation and all that. And that's so refreshing to hear. That's why these wrestlers are like that. And it made me think about the fact that for years and years and years and years, everybody was crapping on John Cena, just begging him to turn heel, doing the Cena sucks chants, doing everything, and really missing out on a pretty damn good career because they were so worried about not having the cool John Cena anymore. Meanwhile, this guy is doing record-breaking Make-A-Wish Foundation appearances. He's bringing in record gates for the WWE, selling record merch, and, you know, just bringing a new audience to the product. It's new young fans, some of whom would have been around my son's age when he first started doing the good guy Cena thing, and now are of that age in the early 20s that are now complaining about somebody like Cody Rhodes being not cool enough anymore. So the vicious cycle continues, but it was really interesting just to have him watching along with me because, you know, being a podcaster, I got to watch this with a keen eye and, you know, check out everything and make sure I bring up all the faults and all the problems and be careful that I don't rate anything too fancy and say, oh, I really love something because I'll get crapped on social media for being a fanboy for WWE or something like that. But he didn't care about that. He just enjoyed the show. And he really did. I mean, it was... Oh, God, how long was that show? I mean, the 4 hours or something like that, 5 hours. I don't even know. I was pretty tired by the end of it, but he's like, I'll do that anytime with you. He asked a million questions during the show, and I loved it. Every single one of it. I could answer them all because this is my forte. This is what I know what to do. I know how to explain it to him and try to. I mean, the funniest part was trying to explain the Money in the Bank briefcase and how that all works because. Man, it's confusing when you think about it, and especially to a brand new fan who's never heard of this stuff, trying to explain all these world titles and who's more important, and is Roman's title more important than Seth's? Is the Intercontinental title more important than the United States title? What's the Money in the Bank briefcase? Why does the women have one, and why does the men have one? Who gets it? And I mean, it was very confusing for a brand new fan, and it just made me think about the fact that it is. It's... You know, it's almost counterintuitive to attracting new fans to the product by doing these type of things. I don't know. It was really fun just sitting with him and watching this show and hearing his excitement, hearing him ask questions, and then seeing him really latch on to some of the stars that they had. So, you know, you talk about the opening match, Logan Paul against Ricochet. He's familiar with Logan Paul. Geez, everybody in the world is. But this is a kid who's 11 years old. Doesn't watch wrestling, doesn't watch MMA, doesn't watch boxing, but he knows who Logan Paul is because he's famous from YouTube. So it was a special thing for Logan Paul to be in the match. He didn't have a clue who Ricochet was, but I'll tell you this, by the time the match was over, he was a fan of Ricochet. He liked his moves, he liked what he did, he liked how athletic he was. He was also a fan of how athletic Logan Paul was as well. But at the end, he didn't like the fact that Logan Paul cheated the win. And that's the whole point. That's what fans are supposed to be angry about. A lot of people thought, oh, that's so cool that Logan Paul won. Or they're going to complain and say, oh, that was a cheap victory. And why didn't they book Logan Paul strong? Why don't they book Ricochet strong? Well, of course, yes, we should have both guys win the match somehow. Because that's how wrestling works, right? We should have Ricochet needs a win. Logan Paul needs a win. Cody Rhodes needs a win. Brock Lesnar needs a win. Everybody needs to win. Everybody needs to win. Everybody needs to be the champion. Everything has to happen now. Has to be that way. He didn't care. He thought Ricochet was cool. Thought he had some really cool moves. And he was mad at Logan Paul for cheating at the end. So there you go. Mission accomplished. So in the very first match of the night, he saw someone that he recognized. He became a fan of somebody else. That's the way it's supposed to work. And myself, I enjoyed the match too. I knew they were going to put on a great show. Very athletic. Yeah, there's a couple of little mess ups here and there, but who cares? He didn't care. He thought it was amazing. Two superheroes going at it. And that's what I thought too at times. they looked like two superheroes going at it. But it was a perfectly fine opening match. And I got to tell you, Logan Paul is going to be a star. And they need to keep pushing this guy. Put a rocket on him. I don't care. Give him the title for all that matters. The titles don't mean anything anyways. Put it on there. Let the internet explode. Let 14 million different 11-year-olds become fans of this guy. Do it. I don't care. next match, Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar. So as I said, big fan of Cody Rhodes because he's a good guy and a really good guy and does the nice things and does the right things. And he's, you know, all-American and all that stuff, even if we are Canadian. Brock Lesnar, scary dude. He looks like he could rip anybody apart. He looks legit scary. And that's the point of Brock Lesnar as well. He got it. He understood that this is the hero against the beast. And this was Cody had to, you know, fight like crazy to get the win. And did he understand that Cody Rhodes was being put over and anointed by Brock Lesnar? Not necessarily. But he liked the fact that Cody won. He liked the fact that Brock turned into a good guy at the end and raised his arm. He overall, he came out satisfied from the match. So did I. I thought it was a good match as well. A good story being told. And again, don't mean to toot my own horn, but as old Arn Anderson used to say, toot, toot. But go on over to the Wrestling with the Truth YouTube channel and check out the video about Cody Rhodes the day after WrestleMania called Trust the Plan. Because obviously the plan is working because the fans are behind Cody. They're building him up. This Brock Lesnar feud has now put him up into the upper echelon in WWE. I know he's in the upper echelon in AEW, but he wasn't there yet in WWE. Well, he certainly is. And guess what? We only have 6 months to go to keep him distracted. Really, when you think about it, we only have about, 4 months to go until Royal Rumble to keep him distracted, where I think he will win once again. Maybe even from the number one spot to claim that that title shot at WrestleMania against who I'm suspecting is going to be Roman Reigns. But we'll see how that goes. In the Battle Royal, again, not familiar with too many people, but he did know Sheamus. That was somebody that he recognized because he vividly remembers Sheamus and Gunther from WrestleMania. They put on such a display that he was actually very familiar with Sheamus. He knew The Miz. He thought The Miz was cool. He gets a kick out of him. Oh, also, one of the people that he was a fan of already was Shinsuke Nakamura, because he thinks he's really cool and how he does his moves and some of the things he does, the shaking that he does when he's his entrance, all that stuff. He doesn't know his win-loss record, but he thinks he's cool and he likes his character. And somebody he became a fan of during the match was Chad Gable. He was really impressed with him. And of course, everybody else was too. Chad Gable put on a tremendous performance. They've been building Chad Gable for the last little while. And again, this is a character that can get can be enjoyed by kids as well as adults. And he's got a great story to go along with it. The smaller guy that's overcoming the bigger guys, showing tremendous power moves. He's got a catchphrase. He's got a good buddy that he's friends with, all this good stuff. And he went from cheering for Sheamus to Shinsuke. He was upset when Shinsuke got eliminated. Didn't quite get LA Knight. That was the funny thing. I kept explaining to him, you know, how LA Knight was going to win this battle royal because he's the guy that they're pushing right now. And he wasn't quite onto it. He was, he's actually still cheering for Sheamus to win it in the last moment. So that was an interesting take. Didn't quite get that character. And that should tell you something right there, too, that, you know, sometimes these characters appeal to an older audience, but does it have the appeal to the overall audience? And that might be a reason why they're slowly working LA Knight into the push, because they got to build and flesh out this character. You know, it's always talked about Vince McMahon, how he needed to flesh out characters and make them WWE characters. And the reason for that is that he's trying to build them as an overall appeal to all ages, because that's what WWE is. They're a company that's built for all ages, not just, you know, a certain demographic. So I did find that interesting, that just even after explaining everything about him, it didn't quite click in with him. But Sheamus was cool. Nakamura was cool. Gable, he didn't even know who Gable was, and he immediately resonated with him. So there's a lot to be said as to why WWE does things some ways. And the right guy won, Knight won. He's got a lot of momentum going now. But honestly, for me, even if he hadn't won, I wouldn't have been devastated. I mean, he's over. It doesn't matter. He is over. And if they had somebody else win the Battle Royal, say if they went with Gable instead, that would have been fine with me. But you know, the right call was made. Knight won. The fans were happy with that moment. It was cool. Next was Baszler and Rousey in their MMA rules match. This match, I think we both agreed was slow and a little hard to understand. There was a couple of moments where it looked really real with some of the shots that happened, but there was a couple of moments where it didn't. So it was kind of a meh between the two of us. So which has basically been, you know, Rousey's career so far. Baszler, I understand, showed up on Raw the next night and looked pretty beat up. So I think there was a few shots that got in there. But overall, they could have done a better job of building this feud up and actually making this match seem a little bit more relevant. I honestly don't even remember the build where they mentioned this is going to be an MMA rules match. So, and that's my bad. Maybe I missed something. But again, it just didn't feel like either of us had a clue what was going on when this first started, and it was kind of a throwaway match. After that, you had the Gunther and Drew McIntyre match. Man, this was this is a great match. It doesn't matter who Gunther's in there with, whether it's McIntyre or Sheamus or Chad Gable or whoever. He's going to have a fantastic match. He is just the Hoss of Hosses for this company, and it's no surprise that he's en route to breaking the Honky Tonk Man's record for days as Intercontinental Champion, but also the fact that he has yet to be pinfalled in WWE is, from my understanding, I don't think he has been on the main roster. So they're really building Gunther, and I have a feeling that he's going to be main event in a WrestleMania at some point with Cody Rhodes for that world title, because this guy is just a monster that's going to be on top of the WWE for a long time. But yeah, we both enjoyed this match. There was times where we both kind of had to shudder as we listened to some of the chops that were going on, not just by Gunther, but also by Drew. He was just amazed by the size of Drew, just thought he was like a giant. Interesting comment. He's playing a good guy, but he acts like a bad guy at times. I thought that was interesting as well. But overall, this was a great match. I like the way they got out of having Drew lose. I know every fan wanted Drew to win, yet win the title, yet Gunther hold on to the title. So I don't know how that works, but of course, you know, everybody's got to get over. But Drew is not buried, by the way. He's fine. It was a great match, and they have a nice oat with the way they lost the match. But overall, we both enjoyed it. The Seth Rollins and Finn Balor match, this is where it got really confusing, because we were trying to explain the whole Money in the Bank, you know, how it works, the stipulation, all that stuff, because it was kept being shown with Damian Priest, and you know, kept being hinted around to he may cash in. So I was trying to explain, by the time I got through explaining, I was confused myself. And he brought up the question, so why doesn't the champion just win it? Great question. It's like, why doesn't the champion just win it? And that way nobody gets it, or, you know, they can't use it on him. Or if he has it, then if he loses, he can use it on the other person. I thought, you know what, kid, you're onto something here. But I think the biggest thing that I take away from this is I really think that the Money in the Bank briefcase and the stipulation is getting kind of stale, to be honest. It's run its course. I mean, I don't know what the win percentage is for people who have it. I think for the women, I think it's 100% for those cash in actually win the title. For the men, it's probably around 75% or something like that. But, you know, at this point, it's not even a surprise anymore. You just expect it to be cashed in all the time. There's no great moment like that whole Dolph Ziggler moment that we had years ago. I mean, it was great at the time, but to me, I just rather see somebody do the chase like Cody's doing and finally get the win, as opposed to these, you know, quick championship takeaways. And the match itself was very similar, if you ask me, to our conversation. It felt like the whole Money in the Bank conversation took away from the actual watching of the match with Rollins and Balor. And I feel like that was the same thing with the match itself, the whole idea that not only that Priest could cash in and become champion, but just the distraction between, you know, with the whole, is there a problem within Judgment Day because of Priest maybe cashing and Balor, you know, being upset about that. So I felt like that kind of dominated the match more so than actually the match itself. Of course, these two guys are going to put on a fantastic match. They're both great performers in there, but overall, it just didn't hit as much as we would have liked. One good thing was, because we spent the whole time talking about the whole Money in the Bank stipulation, when it came time for the women's match, that was when it worked, because I didn't have to explain it, because by the time we finally got to that match, he had figured it out. And then, of course, we did have the cash in that match with EO cashing in and becoming champion. So at least he understood why that happened. And he was actually happy about that. He wanted to see somebody cash in and actually win the championship. So in that way, it did kind of work for the women's match. But the match itself, again, an interesting reaction to it. All three of these women are stars. When we're talking Belair and Asuka and Charlotte, and I told them right off the get-go, this should be a good match, because they're all very good wrestlers. And interestingly enough, watching the match, man, to me, maybe I saw it wrong, but to me, it seemed like they just were not clicking in that match. There was a lot of sloppiness, misses, things like that. There was also some really cool athletic moments, and there were some good moments throughout the match, because again, they are great performers, but it just seemed like something was off for most of the match. But again, his reaction was he didn't care about that. He thought, you know, it was a good match. He thought they all three of them looked like stars. He thought that that there was some really cool stuff that they did. There was some stuff that looked like it really hurt Bianca, you know, really athletic. Thought that Asuka's face paint was cool and thought that the mist was cool as well, and really liked the ending. Thought that was pretty well done, and I did too. I thought that was interesting the way they did it with the, for me, I when we were talking about it, I was predicting the winners of these matches for them all through, and I was doing pretty good. I think I was 100% up until this point. And I said, I don't think it's going to be Bianca. I actually thought it was going to be Bianca turning heel. If anything, I thought it was probably going to be Charlotte wins, so they get another title reign on her, and then quickly Io would cash in. I actually thought it would have been Bianca turning heel because she was so frustrated with the loss, beating down Charlotte, which would lead her leave her for easy pickings for Io. But that's not how it happened. It was Bianca getting the surprise win. So he actually predicted that. he thought she's not going to turn heel. She's going to be the female John Cena. And so, and maybe that is the case. I thought, you know, with the Street Profits turning heel over on SmackDown, that maybe Bianca would join. But again, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that they're husband and wife and stuff like that. He just knows what the character is seeing on screen. So he, the kiddo was actually right on his prediction. So Bianca did get the quick win. And then right away we have Io come in and, you know, cash in. The crowd was excited for it, just like they should be for a heel. Over one of their top baby faces. Of course, the crowd should be very excited to see them come in, smash that baby face in the face with a briefcase, and get the win, because that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. Well, he just thought it was a cool moment, to be quite honest. He wasn't really sure what Io was. He didn't know if she was a bad guy or a good guy or all that stuff, but he thought it was just, after me spending so much time trying to explain how this whole thing works, thought it was cool. So so it worked in the long run, but again, it's not good when you have your biggest baby face getting cheered when they're getting beaten and beaten by cheating. So anyways, just keep that in mind, WWE and wrestling fans. And then finally, we had Roman Reigns and Jey Uso in the Tribal Combat match for the Undisputed Championship. And again, for me, this was a long, slow match. Very long, slow match. But it picked up, I'd say, in the second half of the match, but it took a while to get there. The storyline with the Bloodline has been fantastic throughout, but the ending for me fell a little flat and a little confusing, to be honest with you. I'm thinking to myself, why would Jimmy turn on Jay? It just made no sense to me, and I'm sure they'll explain it, and I'm sure there's something I missed along the way because I haven't been watching every single second of wrestling, modern wrestling. But to me, it seemed like a reach. It seemed like a swerve just to have a swerve, which is ironic because this past week, he also had the Dark Side of the Ring talking about Vince Russo and the Bash at the Beach 2000. Speaking of swerves, but yeah, it just seemed like a swerve for the sake of swerving. So I'm interested to see where they're going. Now, one astute person on Instagram or Twitter or something like that, they pulled something from back before WrestleMania when Jimmy and Jay were facing off against Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And it was just a verbal battle in the ring. And at one point, Jimmy mentioned about being the tribal chief. You're dealing with the tribal chief in this. So that might be a little nugget they had dropped as far as why this is the case, but that's a very little nugget. And we're talking a real small Easter egg there versus you know, there's been nothing to show that these two guys would have any reason to be, you know, it's a brother, like, you know, have him turn on his brother just for that. That was kind of weird. Now, I know the Usos have been on record saying that they do want to have a feud with each other before their careers end. And so that may just be the reason. They just finally decided to pull the trigger, and they needed something in order to get around this whole stipulation and keep this reign going for Roman Reigns, but I'm not sure. I mean, yes, you could try to stretch this out to WrestleMania because it's in Philadelphia, which of course is the city of brotherly love. So to have brother against brother, maybe even throw a Solo in there and you have brother versus brother versus brother in a match at WrestleMania. Okay, well, it kind of goes with the theme, but you got a long road to get there as well to figure this out. So I figure the only route they may want to go is with the whole Bret Hart Owen Hart route that they went with back in 1993-94 when Owen turned on Bret, and Bret refused to fight his brother. And just he could never face his brother. Kind of similar, they did the same thing with Undertaker and Kane, actually, where Undertaker refused to fight his brother until he had no choice, that he had to. So they could go that route to push off this feud for a little bit, but I'll be interested to see where they go with him. As far as the 11-year-old critic's response, enjoyed the match, thought there was some cool stuff, thought there was some really painful stuff with, you know, the table spots and the kendo stick spots and, you know, some of the false finishes, Solo interfering, and then the spear through the wall really got him. Now, that's something we've seen many times now, so it just doesn't have as much impact at this moment. I'm so sick and tired of tables, to be honest with you. And then, of course, he was just flabbergasted with Jimmy interfering and couldn't understand why. So he's wondering what the story is, and we were both sitting there trying to come up with, well, what's the reason that this happened? What do you think it was? But in the end, he went away from the entire night, 5 hours of watching or whatever it was. By the time we were done, it was 1:45 in the morning here because we're on a Atlantic time zone. So it was pretty late. It was luckily it's summer vacation right now. And the two of us were pretty exhausted. But he went to bed questioning what is going on with Jimmy Uso and why would he do that to his brother? So again, job well done, I guess, WWE. You got this little fan questioning things. Overall, he loved it. He loved the SummerSlam. He had a great time. He didn't care what's on social media. He didn't care about the crowd and what they were reacting to. He was just reacting to what's going on in the ring. And again, as a long-term wrestling fan, I'm trying to get back to that. That's why I'm pulling away from social media, to be quite honest. I'm really not enjoying it. I'm not very often on Twitter, just really just to promote the show, you know, to promote other shows I like. But there's not too much I'm doing on Twitter right now because it's just, that's probably the most negative spot of all. I'm finding more on Instagram and on Facebook a little bit, but Instagram for the most part. But really, it's not really what I'm enjoying at this time. So yeah, it's a negative zone right now, and I've mentioned this many times over the last little while. It's really making me negative on the product, and I don't want to be that way. Honestly, like I've decided that I don't want to be that way. If there's something I don't like, I'm not going to watch it. If there's something I don't like on social media, I'm just not going to bother with it. I might go Ted the Hillbilly Heels route. You know, the gentleman whose ad you heard during the show, and I appreciate Ted for doing so, providing that ad. But yeah, Ted's completely gone off of social media, and I think he's feeling much fresher and revived and putting on better quality content because of it. And I think that route may eventually be what I'm doing. So if all else fails, if I ever jump off of social media, you can always get me at my email at bchunterwwtt@gmail.com. If you'd like to, you know, give some comments on the episodes, give a 5-star review that I can read out here, or you just want to reach out and say, hey, you know, just checking in. But feel free to use that email as well. But if you want, for now, I am on Twitter at BCHunterWWTT or WWTTPod. And, you know, on Instagram at Wrestling with the 80s and Wrestling with the Truth. And then Facebook, I'm BC Hunter and Wrestling with the Truth as well on there. Yeah, I just wanted to do this episode just talking a little bit of a review of SummerSlam from a different perspective because my cool son helped me see it from a different perspective. And maybe once in a while you guys can do that too. Just take a look at wrestling from a different perspective. Do it from being that childhood fan perspective as well and understand why they're going a certain route with a lot of these characters. But yeah, anyways, I'll let it be at that. Appreciate any feedback that you have, and I really appreciate everybody's support and all the listeners that are listening to this show. And I hope you have a great day, and we will see you next week.